Ladies and gentlemen, we've reached the appointed time. We do not have a quorum at this point, but we're going to get the meeting started. And there is a change in the order of bills. I would just remind everyone that these are informational hearings. These bills are not actually in possession of this committee at this time, but we are doing informational hearings on these various issues so we get ourselves educated in the event that the bills do come to us later. But there's a little change in order. First up is going to be Representative Lean and his bill that we're going to hear about. So if you want to come forward, Representative Lean, with your crew, the bill, which is not in our possession, but the number on it is House File 595. So we will officially bring this meeting to order once a quorum arrives, but in the meantime, we can go ahead with testimony. So if you would like to introduce the issue for us, Representative Lean, and then our testifiers can introduce themselves when they start to testify. Please go ahead.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm bringing today forward House File 595, which is a capital investment appropriation request in the amount of $5.66 million to complete a flood mitigation project in Clay County, where the local match has been completely met for the project, and the project is shovel-ready. This project is located in a part of what used to be Oakport Township that has been annexed into the city of Moorhead as of January 1st, 2015. The project will raise and reroute about a mile of county highway, which will act as the final phase of this flood mitigation levy. And this is the final phase of a project that's been ongoing for about 5 years, a flood mitigation work for the Oakport area that will benefit roughly 450 homes. And with that, I will turn it over to Bruce Albright, who's the administrator for the Buffalo Red River Watershed District.
Thank you. Please introduce yourself for the record. Thank you.
Mr. Bruce Albright, administrator, Buffalo Red River Watershed District, headquartered out of Barnesville, Minnesota. With me today also is Mr. Peter Fiested. He is a manager of the Buffalo Red River Watershed District and represents Ottertail County. Ladies and gentlemen of the House Capital Investment Committee, pleased to be here once again. I've made these trips quite frequently over the years, I guess, since the watershed started working with the Oakport Flood Mitigation Project. The 1997 spring flood, I think, was an eye-opener for Fargo-Moorhead, Grand Forks, East Grand Forks, for example. That's when they lost most of the town. And the Oakport area obviously was impacted. We have some 700 homes north of Moorhead, which was part of the township. Every structure in that area was impacted by the 1997 spring flood. If they were not directly flooded, they lost their sewer system and sewage backed into their basements. They started working with the Army Corps of Engineers, and that ultimately got turned over. They came to Buffalo Red River Watershed District. At the time, we were a five-person board, mostly farmers on the board, and said, please help us. We need help with flood control. The state has helped in that regard. I think some of the first funding came from the state of Minnesota for that project, starting in 2006. We started construction of the project in 2008. We just got the project started, and along came the 2009 flood, which was about 2.5 feet higher than the 1997 flood. So they went through the same ordeal one more time. Since 2009, we have been able to complete about 75% of the project. In 2009, we completed all of the easement work, all of the buyouts. There were about approximately 70 homes that needed to be bought out for the project. That was all done with hopes that we could just finish the Oakport project. 2013, 2014, no construction work took place because we were waiting for the state share for the to meet the 2% median household income threshold, which the locals have met, which is about $782,000. So as the administrator for the watershed, I probably get a dozen calls a year. What's going to happen with Oakport in 2015? and hopefully with Representative Lean's bill and your support, and if there's enough funding in the bonding bill, we could complete the Oakport project this year. It's been a long time in coming, and it would be nice to get it done. Flood control work is kind of explained as, you know, the log chain, it's only as good as its weakest link. We have 75% of this done. It makes sense to put the last leg in place so that we have closure. I did bring along a graphic. I understand that your maps did not come through in color. This is the Oakport area. To the south of the map is the Red River of the North. That river has a watershed of about 6,000 square miles at this point, coming out of three states, Minnesota, North Dakota, and South Dakota. The Red River, of course, flows north. And what happens when the water in the river gets to about elevation, river level 35 feet, it starts to break north and follow an old channel that flows right through the heart of our project. Some think that maybe that was the original course of the river at one point in time, way back when. When that does, of course, we have homes both on the east side and the west side of that Oakport coulee, and that water then just starts to break out of the coulee and sheet flow west back to the Red River over on the west side. So everybody on this map is impacted one way or the other. Some have said, why didn't you just raise the road? We have to be very careful what we do in the Red River Basin, that we don't impact others. This project, when finished, has a zero impact on the neighbors to the south, to the north, or in North Dakota or the city of Fargo. So we've completed this in several phases. This part of the diking on the east side of the project is done. The north side is done. The west side of the coulee is done, the south side. So the requested funding of $5.66 million would complete the west side, as noted by Representative Lane. So I would be happy to answer any questions you might have about this project.
excuse me, sir. Could you just tell us where on this map you are the houses that were bought out and moved out of the floodplain?
They were primarily along the river, and the reason why they were
just point that out on your on your map.
They would be these homes that would have laid along the river. On this particular map, they're denoted with the little red circles, and the reason why they were the houses adjacent to the river is because of the nature of the soils we have in the Red River Valley. This area sits on about 100 foot of clay, silty material until you hit bedrock. We could not protect those homes because the levee would have been too close to the river and would not have been geologically, you could not put a dike in that area. What happens, we have slides along the river. You put weight next to the river, the dike would have just slid out of the way.
Excuse me, I didn't jot your name down when you introduced yourself.
Bruce Albright, Administrator for Buffalo Red River Watershed District.
Mr. Albright, so when the water breaks out, I assume it's that old channel or what looks like an old channel is the Oakport Coulee. Is that correct?
You are correct, sir.
And does water flow through that when it breaks out of the river, or is it just back up in there?
It flows through there at about elevation 35 feet, so 1997 river levels got to about 39 and a half feet. In 2009 river levels got to about 41 feet. At about 34 or 35 feet, water busts out of the Red River of the North and flows northwesterly through this area.
And then where does it re-enter the Red Channel, the main channel?
It's off the map here. It's approximately 5 to 6 miles further north that goes right back into the river. But what we've seen from the flooding, it will do that at a lower elevation. It wants to flow northwesterly, but when it runs back into the river, when the river gets near 38, 39 feet, they just continue to rise collectively. They're both at the same elevation.
So at that point, then, is your community isolated? the center section of the map. Is it, am I reading that correctly?
It was isolated in both the 1997 and 2009 floods. The National Guard came in and put in a temporary bridge, and by license only could you get back into the Oakport area. With this project now, part of the dike system are road raises so that we have access to the area during the 100-year flood.
And where on the map is that access point?
One of the primary access points would be along the west side with the phase that we have left to do, County Road 1.
So, but how do you, I'm trying to see on the map, you have to cross the river someplace to get access, is that correct?
You cross the Red River off here in the corner of the map. That's coming from North Dakota into Minnesota. Right here is the North Dakota, Minnesota. You cross at this location, and you can also get access off the east side from Trunk Highway 75. In 1997 and 2009, this set of culverts up here washed out, and that road was impassable. The National Guard came in and put a temporary bridge in, and that was the only access. The road is underwater here, where I pointed out earlier we're going across. This washed out, and the National Guard maintained just a single traffic bridge across this point for the residents to get into Oakport Township.
Thank you. I'm going to interrupt for a moment. We do have a quorum available. I'll officially call the meeting to order. Representative Hansen, would you like to approve the minutes?
I would move the adoption of the minutes.
Hansen moves the adoption of the minutes from February 19th. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. I'm sorry, I made a mistake. It's February 26th. I reword your motion on your with your permission, Representative Hansen. All those in favor of the minutes as presented for February 26th, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed by the same sign. Minutes are approved. We have a couple of questions from members. I've been advised by staff if you do want a color version of the map, we can get one for you if you need it. But right now we'll have a question from Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Albright, and I apologize if you answered this question. I came in a couple minutes late. So it says here that it's affecting about 450 homes. Do you know what the population is? Is it twice that or a little bit over 1,000?
I would say, Representative and members, the population of this area we estimate to be somewhere around 750 people, keeping in mind that we did buy out approximately 70 homes here, which are homes that could not be protected by any type of a levee. And the area has some potential for growth when the flood control levee project is completed.
Representative Dean, a follow-up? Representative Smith.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Albright, thank you. Sir, you mentioned that this levee does not impact any of the communities downstream.
Mr.
You are
Albright.
Correct.
Representative Smith.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Albright, so how can that be? Isn't by virtue of any levee impact the amount of water downstream? How does that work?
Mr. Albright.
Representative Smith and members of the committee, because we left the corridor open, where the Cooley naturally flowed through the area, and given the placement of the dikes in that area, the analysis shows that this project has a zero impact both downstream and upstream. Now, I understand what you're probably saying is if you protect 750 acres where water used to stand, now that water no longer stands in that area, it went someplace. And, of course, keeping in mind that, as I said earlier, we've got 6,000 square miles of water coming at us at this point from three different states. So those changes to that water surface profile really get to be minuscule. They're to the point where how do you measure them? And that's where we say zero impact.
Thank you. I do not see any other questions. Any final remarks, Representative Lean?
No, Mr. Chair, other than I appreciate your time and the time of the committee in this informational hearing.
Thank you very much for bringing the issue to us. Next up, we have House File 1158, Representative Baxter.
Good
Welcome to the committee, Representative Backer. If you'd care to introduce the issue of the Bill 1158, which we are reviewing for informational purposes.
Thank you, Chair and members. This is a four projects for flood mitigation. The first project deals with the city of Browns Valley. In 2007, when I was mayor, we received the worst flooding ever in its history of the community, 150-year history. And we started a three-phase project for flood mitigation. We have successfully completed phase one and phase two. That was in 2009-2010. Now, this part of the bill talks about phase three, which is a coulee. We call it the Tolley coulee, which would then take the complete community out of the floodplain. So this is phase three. So, and Diane will go through more details. The state of Minnesota, we have invested a good fair amount of money to take the community out of floodplain. So we want to do phase three. The other second project is with the city of Ortonville. That's another flood mitigation project, and Diane and the mayor, Steve, will speak on that. And then we also have another flood mitigation project with the Big Lake, which helps to with the flooding that Herman, Minnesota, sees. And then we have the Red Path project, and Ron will speak on that. So I will turn this over to the testifiers.
Please introduce yourself for the record.
My name is Diane Rademacher. I'm administrator for the Upper Minnesota River Watershed District. We are located in Ortonville, Minnesota, in west central Minnesota. Also with me, I have the mayor of Ortonville, Steve Berkner. He will also be testifying on behalf of the city for the Whetstone Restoration Project. I'd like to start out with the Tolley Coulee Project. Representative Backer has stated, the largest flood of record in Browns Valley was in 2007, and during that time, DNR joined up with the city of Browns Valley to actually draft a flood mitigation plan. And in that plan, it identified two major sources of flooding within the city of Browns Valley. One was the Little Minnesota River that comes out of the Coteau Hills in South Dakota, and the other is the Tolley Coulee, which is located on the northeast side of Browns Valley. And in, I believe, 1965?
Yes, actually 66.
66. A major rainfall event that happened up in the Coteau Hills in South Dakota. I think there was between 3.5 and 5 inches of rain during that particular storm. The Tolley Coulee is approximately 25 feet deep, and it has a county road that actually acts as a dam to that coulee. And at the bottom of that coulee is a very small culvert. So when you get a heavy influx of heavy rain, that coulee fills up to the point where it overtops, and it comes down and it floods the entire north half of Browns Valley. The project that we have, I gave you a map that shows some of the components of that project. It includes a levee that will go alongside of the west side of the Tolley Coulee, preventing that flow from entering back into the city.
Excuse me, can you point out just which map we're trying to look at here?
Yep, it kind of looks like this. You're probably not in color either, I'm assuming.
We have a copy. Thank you, and please proceed with your testimony.
The actual levee would be located here. This is the coulee that comes down from the, if you look in the far right-hand corner, that's actually the coulee itself there. What they would do is we'd actually install a levee along here, preventing the breakout flows from coming back and flooding this whole entire north half of the city. Through this process, there's another major tributary that runs through the city. We would actually clean that out. We'd install levees down here to make sure that the backflow doesn't come back through the city also. I believe the total cost left on this project, which is the final phase, which does flood-proof the city of Browns Valley, is $1.7 million. But we have spent considerable amount of money on this project already. To date, all the survey work has been completed. A cultural resource study has been done. All the permitting is done. The wetland mitigation for the project is done. And the final designs are 25% completed as of today.
All right. Representative Poppy has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question about if you've done any acquisition of property. I don't know if you mentioned that, but I'm just curious.
Go ahead.
No acquisition has been done at this time, and there will be very little acquisition just where that levee is located on the west side of the coulee.
Representative Poppy.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. So it will be residential homes that you're purchasing or any commercial businesses?
Ms. Rademacher.
No, there is no, we will not be purchasing anything. The dikes will be inside of those homes. There's approximately three homes along that side of the coulee.
One, two, three. At least three, thinking about it. We got views.
Representative
Becker. I'm sorry. Chair, and representative, excuse me. Yeah, there's three to four homes, that's correct. But there's no acquisition of property or acquisition of commercial buildings at all.
Okay, very good. Representative Hausman has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and mine might be to you, I'm not sure. I've been, as all these bills have been coming up, I've always been tracking them on our sheet, and they always match the name and the amount that's ready, but I don't know if these are called something else on this. I can't find any of them.
Please introduce yourself for the record.
Ron Harnick for the Red River Watershed Management Board, and Mr. Chairman, Representative Hausman. These two projects were not on the DNR request list from last year, so that's why you do not see them on there right now, but I believe that Kent is probably adding these to the list going forward.
Representative Hausman.
All three?
Yes.
Okay, that I believe covers the Thule. What was the name of it again?
Thule.
Sorry about that. Okay. And on to the next project, Representative Becker.
Yes, the next project would be the Whetstone River Restoration Project. It is also connected to the Browns Valley Flood Mitigation Project. Through that process, when we did the first phase of the Browns Valley Project, there indicated that there would be a potential 0.3 foot of rise on Big Stone Lake, which is located directly south of Browns Valley. In order to mitigate that impact on Big Stone Lake, the watershed district was required through mitigation to hold Big Stone Lake 0.2 foot lower during the summer or restore the Whetstone River, which is not the only reason we're restoring the Whetstone River. It's just added another impact onto what the impacts already were to Big Stone Lake. In the 1940s, the state of Minnesota actually diverted the Whetstone River, which is 440 square miles, into Big Stone Lake. And the reason for that was after the 30s, they wanted to have some kind of security as far as lake elevations. When they completed the project 3 years later, Big Stone suffered its greatest flood ever 3 years after that project was done. There were several lawsuits with the state of Minnesota over the flooding. I believe they bought flowage easements at that time from several individuals along Big Stone Lake. And since that time, we have suffered three major floods. Once again, 1997, which a lot of people suffered during that time, but that was the greatest flood of record so far. 2001 was another flood, and then again in 2010. Damages due to the flooding are numerous. The watershed district alone has almost $1 million in damages from those three flood events. Steve is here. He will speak on behalf of the city and the experience that they've had. City of Bortonville is located directly on Big Stone Lake. And I will let the mayor kind of inform you of some of the damages that the city has suffered.
Thank you. Before you continue, Mayor, just to get a little bit of context here on the Whetstone River, can you tell me a little more about where it comes from, where it went, and where it goes now?
Yes, you have a map, and I'm guessing it's in black and white again. Looks like this.
Yes, we do.
It actually shows the original river channel is highlighted on mine. This is the old river channel. What happened was the state of Minnesota diked it up on the north side of your map here. And what they did is they constructed a new diversion channel that takes it directly across to Big Stone Lake. You cannot see Big Stone Lake. It's in the upper, it'd be just to the north off of this map. So this was completely cut off, and it's been cut off since the 1940s. By increasing the amount of flow through here, it can't, we have a control structure located just downstream of here. It's called the Big Stone Lake Whetstone River Flood Control Project. It was a structure that was owned by the state, still is owned by the state, but the watershed district operates and maintains that. The flow from the Whetstone River cannot make a 90-degree angle and go down through the dam, so it shoots directly into Big Stone Lake. And like I said, Big Stone Lake has a watershed of 750,000 acres. And this Whetstone River is 404 square miles alone that has been added to that system. Big Stone Lake is the 10th largest lake in the state of Minnesota. And in 1997, it rose 7 feet in 7 days. The potential for this project would have lowered that 1997 flood by more than 2 feet, which makes it very tolerable for the citizens on Big Stone Lake. It would have taken the 2010 flood, and it would reduce that by 1.1 feet, which also is very tolerable for the city and for the residents on Big Stone Lake.
All right. Mr. Mayor, please introduce yourself for the record.
My name is Steve Berker. I'm the mayor of the city of Ortonville.
And the last name again?
Berker, B as in boy, E-R-K-N-E-R. I have to do that all the time.
Go ahead, Mr. Mayor.
Just to concur with some of Diane's thoughts, prior to that project starting back in the 30s, and I think it wasn't finished until late in the 40s, the Big Stone Lake watershed, or the amount of water that flowed through the lake, was about 500,000 acres. By adding that Whetstone River diversion, that more or less added a third up to 750,000 acres that now drain through the Big Stone Lake dam, or that structure. When that water overwhelms the dam, that's when we start seeing the lake starting to rise. Now, we see that probably 5 or 6 times a year. It'll overwhelm the dam, just a short rainfall event or something like that. But it's the spring flooding that really overwhelms that dam, and we start seeing the lake starting to back up. Now, the city of Ortonville is located right on the southern shores of Big Stone Lake, so we are at the headwaters of the Minnesota River. And the force of that water coming down the Whetstone, whether it's trees, whether it's sediment, whether it's livestock, dead livestock, it just ends up in the south end of the lake. On the shores of Big Stone Lake, and a majority of this infrastructure in the community was built prior to the 30s, there's 90 homes that are serviced by a sewer lift station. And that lift station was overwhelmed in all three of these flood events, 97, 2001, and 2010. And at that time, we pretty much lose complete control of that. There again, there's 90 homes. I believe there's 2 businesses that are tied into that system. And for about 21 days, those homes are without working water and sewer that we have to shut off. The cost to the city over the years, a small cities development grant that we received after the 97 flood to help take care of some of the flood damage was $1.3 million. Our records show, again, in 2010, we got a FEMA payment or adjustment that we were able to make to our general fund in the amount of $185,000. Most of these settlements and inputs that we're getting don't account for the labor and that type of stuff that our city crew, we have a community of 1,800 people. We have a staff of 14 people. That's pretty much all they're doing during this time is keeping up with this flood event and that type of stuff.
Okay. Representative Hausman has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, for Mr. Harnack, just one more follow-up. So the list that Mr. Lacosmo always provides for us has one column that says, you know, how much is needed, and then what's ready in 2015, what's ready in 2016. So of these three, what can you tell us about
Mr. Harnack?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hausman, I believe that Mr. Lacosmo has put together a new list, and I think that is shareable. And I think I'd rather have Kent speak to that issue himself, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Harnack. Would you like to have Ms. Director Lachman?
He can just give us the sheet whenever he's ready.
All right. It looks like he's digging through his briefcase as we speak. So, any other questions? So, Representative Hansen has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And is this in the Bois de Sioux Watershed District?
No, this
Ms.
is in the, this is the headwaters of the Minnesota River. So we are located just right on the opposite side of the Continental Divide.
Representative Hansen.
And Mr. Chair, I know the Bois de Sioux Watershed District had kept track of all of their drainage permits, tiling permits that they had issued over the last 20 years and showed exponential growth in the amount of tiling that had occurred. Is, has your watershed done any of that analysis with reporting of the tiling?
Ms. Rademacher.
Yes, we have all of our permitting records, but 100% of this watershed, 100%, is in the state of South Dakota. And we have 1,000 foot of fall from the Coteau Hills in South Dakota to the structure. That's more than we have from Ortonville to the Gulf of Mexico.
Representative Hansen.
And Mr. Chair, in the South Dakota data, what's the amount of tiling that has occurred in the last 20 years?
Ms. Rademacher.
I'm sorry. Yes, they do keep track, and we do have those records from both Grant and Roberts County out of South Dakota. And it's surprising to know that only 110 tiling permits total have been issued, far less than what we see locally in Ortonville.
Representative Hansen.
And Mr. Chair, any drainage ditch cleanouts or new private ditching, do they have track of, keep track of that?
Ms. Rademacher.
I don't know that they actually take care of cleanouts. Everything in South Dakota goes through NRCS and the county boards, which is being changed currently right now in South Dakota. There's a law out there that they want to establish drainage authorities. But for right now, as far as I know, as far as the drainage systems, I don't have any idea what there's been for cleanouts.
Very good. So was there a third phase to this?
Chair, there's two other projects, and I'll have Ron speak on those.
Mr. Harnett.
Mr. Chairman and members, John Rochline, who's the administrator for the Bois de Sioux Watershed District, had intended to be there, but due to a late meeting last night and the snow this early morning, he was not able to see the road to get here. So I am standing in for the Bois de Sioux. There are two projects in this bill, and I will refer to the Big Lake project first. The Big Lake is a project that sits right above Herman, Minnesota, and the lake is a what I would call a tweener lake. It's not a real good fish lake. It's not a real good wildlife lake. And the objective of this project is to provide enhanced water management and enhanced water level control to manage it for rough fish, to minimize that, as well as to enhance the shallow lake habitat options for this watershed. It will also provide increased storage that will provide protection for the city of Herman. The project involves putting in a new control structure to put in some piping that will then get the water to a stream where it does not have any adverse impact on the city of Herman. We call this a partnered project with DNR because it is a public water. There are unique things that we have to go through in terms of permitting, and we are working with them to define a management plan that everybody feels is a win-win all the way around. It's our hope that final design and permitting will be completed in the next few months, and that bids could be let for it late this fall. It's a 50-50 cost share project, look forward to working with the committee on this as we go forward.
Representative Wiginius has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm getting a conflict in what you're saying, so just help me understand this. I mean, you were talking about it would be a bigger storage, yet you're going to have an outlet to let some of the water out into a stream. So which is it? Or did I just misunderstand it?
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Harnack,
and Representative Wiginius, it is both. Currently, it's got a fixed crest structure at the outlet, so you cannot manage the water levels whatsoever. We will put in a water level control structure that can be managed, so the lake can be drawn down and the lake can be held higher depending on the management objectives at a given point in time during the year for habitat, as well as in anticipation of the snowfall and frost depth in the tributary areas, so that we can ensure adequate amount of storage during the spring flood events.
Representative Wiginius.
So you're going to let some of the water out so there's room in the summer, I mean in the winter, to store extra water. So you're going to put it in a stream. What river is that going into? Pomme de Terre or?
Mr. Harnack.
Mr. Chair and Representative Wiginius, actually, I don't remember the name of the stream.
I don't either, but it ends up in the Red
Pack. Yeah, it ends up in the Red Path River and ultimately into the Red River of the North.
If I can have one.
Yes, and if you could talk a little more directly to your mic, I'm having a little trouble hearing you, Representative.
Okay, thank you. So you talked about rough fish, so I'm assuming you mean carp are in the lake? And if so, how are you going to keep the carp out of the stream and keep them from going to the Red River?
Mr. Harnack.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Wiginius, there's two ways that are being looked at that. One is, since there's going to be an underground culvert as part of the outlet, there may be able to be a velocity approach that would deal with that. And also, if fish, rough fish, do get up into the basin, then the ability to draw it down and freeze it out during strategic times would help manage and control the rough fish in the lake and help promote native vegetative growth in the basin.
Representative Wiginius.
But that didn't answer the question of that answers the question for the lake, but it doesn't answer the question for where you're putting the water and the rough fish traveling out of the lake and into the river and into the Red River. That's what I was trying to get at.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, Hart. Representative Wiginius, you know, the Red River of the North, we would like it if it didn't have any rough fish in it, but it does. There's a lot of work, I think, being done to try to restore the natural warm water fishery to the Red and to the tributaries. And this is one way and means of help managing the rough fish. If we can control them in these shallow basins, it gives us a little bit of a head start in managing it in the river system as a whole.
Mr. Harnack, is the only outlet from Big Lake through some underground structure?
Mr. Chairman, right now it's a surface water structure. It's just a natural ditch. But in order to effectively manage the outflow from it, the proposal is to put it in a 24-inch culvert. Some of that is due to landowner desires as part of the land acquisition. The Watershed District does try to pay attention to the desires of the landowners when we're crossing private property and having to acquire interest in that private property.
Mr. Harnack, I'm looking at the picture here, and it's quite small, and of course it's not in color. But does this 24-inch pipe then flow through town? Can you kind of clarify that for me?
Mr. Chairman, it doesn't flow all the way through town, but it flows through the south, what would be the southeast corner. You'll see a line that goes from the lake and then down to just the southeast corner of town, and then it would outlet into the natural water course. So it does go through about two blocks of downtown, not downtown, but of a residential area.
And Mr. Harnack, it's underground throughout that course, is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
And those pipes are in place now?
No, Mr. Chairman, they are not. Those are pipes that would go in. Right now it functions as an open ditch, and that is the problem for the flooding in Herman when you can't control the outlet of the lake.
So there's an open ditch going through town now, is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Thank you. I don't see any other questions regarding the Big Lake project. It looks like you've got another one.
Mr. Chairman, the next project is one in which some of the committee members may have heard about before or certainly visited its sister project, the North Ottawa project. This one is Red Path. It is a 2,600-acre water management facility that will have 11 miles of dikes and involve 5.5 miles of restoration of the Mustinka River. The Red River is somewhat unique from many parts of the state because you had old glacial Lake Agassiz, very flat, and the Corps of Engineers, in its infinite wisdom, back during the 50s, channelized most of the natural water courses in the Red River Valley. And unfortunately, that channelization has not done a heck of a lot for reducing flood control as was intended. And so, as part of our floodwater retention projects, we are attempting to integrate multiple use benefits associated with it. So, in this project, we're going to provide 24,000 acre feet of storage. 19,000 of that would be gated. We will be virtually eliminating downstream damages to roads, bridges, culverts, and agricultural lands downstream. It also has a benefit as far down as Breckenridge and even a slight benefit as that water reaches Fargo-Moorhead area. The part of the pool is going to be managed for northern pike spawning. Department of Natural Resources Fisheries really has a strong interest in seeing these warm water fishery habitats enhanced. So through our impoundment management and through the restoration of the Mustinka River, we are going to provide significant areas for northern pike spawning. From a water quality standpoint, there's also a significant benefit. We will be storing the majority of the water that comes down the drainage systems from the upstream watershed. That sediment, particularly the sediment phosphorus, will drop out through the pool management plan and actually eliminate the impairment downstream in the waters from particularly a turbidity standpoint. So we feel it's important to have multi-purpose projects. This project in particular does have $2.4 million that Lessard Sams has allocated to it. We also are looking to about $1 million coming from the Fargo-Moorhead Diversion Authority to help with this project because it does have an impact on reducing peak flows at Fargo-Moorhead. And we are also looking at some additional federal dollars through a partnership on some of the buffers that will be put in place as well as the stream restoration on this project. What we're looking for at this point is $600,000 in state dollars to finish acquisition and final plans and specs, and then we would be proceeding to formal construction in future years. That completes my testimony. If you stand any questions anybody may have.
Thank you, Mr. Harnack. If you could just kind of outline the future needs for this project. I realize that's not what we're going to be approving at this time, but but any idea if this project is seen through its final phases, how much state obligation or how much state contribution might you be looking for?
Mr. Chairman and members, on the sheet that you have in your handouts, this is a $35 million project. We have already received $5 million in state funding for it, and we would be looking at another about $14 million over the next 4 years for completion of this project. We would hope that there are some additional federal funds that would be coming to help lower that amount, but the proof's in the pudding on that at this point in time.
Mr. Harnack, on one of the earlier projects of this size, you had mentioned that there may be some farming, desire to farm some of this land when it's not flooded. Would that be part of this project?
Mr. Chairman and members, yes, it is. As you kind of look at the Pool 3 area on this map, a significant portion of Pool 3 would be proposed to be farmed as a way and means to provide O&M for the longevity and maintenance of the project. We think that's really critical when we're making a significant investment like this, that we have a ongoing way and means to provide for the operation and maintenance of these facilities.
So have you worked out all the details on how that will operate and all the all the mechanics are in place to make that feasible?
Mr. Chairman, one of the issues that we ran into, and I'll be candid, we did run into some problems with MMB on this, and we were renting the land out to farmers, which was certainly the preferable way that the watershed district and the landowners wanted to see it. Because of some of the constraints imposed by MMB, the watershed district has had to become the farmer. It's not the way the watershed district wants to do business. We're continuing to have discussions with MMB and trying to find a way and means that we can return to the way we were doing it originally. Those discussions are still ongoing.
Well, thank you, Mr. Harnack. I look forward to future conversations on that issue in hopes that we can do something more realistic there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
I do not see any other questions from members regarding these projects. Ms. Representative Backer, do you have any final remarks?
Chair and members, just appreciate if this comes up, what your consideration for supporting this. It does provide flood mitigation in three communities in west central Minnesota, and then, of course, the flood mitigation and other wildlife benefits with the Red Path. So thank you, and I appreciate your time today.
Thank you, Representative Beck, for bringing these projects forward. Next up, we have Representative Miller with House File 1067. Again, reminding members that these are informational hearings only. Representative Miller, if you'd like to go ahead and introduce your project.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members, for hearing my bill, House File 1067, today. This is for flood mitigation for the city of Maynard. For the past 5 years, rapid snow melts and heavy rainwaters have run over the ditch berm wall in West Maynard, flooding homes, businesses, sanitary sewer lines, streets, the cemetery, sanitary sewer ponds, and Lion Park. 24 homes, 4 businesses, 4,120 feet of sanitary sewer line, 87 cemetery graves, 2 sewage treatment ponds, and 12 acres of Lion Park were damaged by the floodwaters. Over the past 15 years, the repairs and cleanup from these damages have totaled in the millions of dollars. The claims against the city for damages to private homes have resulted in the city's insurer to consider canceling their insurance policy. Our solution. The proposed solution to the problem involves increasing the height of the berm on County Drainage Ditch 11 and Hawk Creek by an average of 3 feet. This construction would begin just south of the BNSF railroad tracks on County Drainage Ditch 11 to Hawk Creek, following Hawk Creek east to Vardis Street, The estimated length of the improvement is 5,860 lineal feet, and the cost is $655,870. The city will be contributing the local share for this improvement. The increase in berm height will eliminate floodwaters escaping County Drainage Ditch 11 and Hawk Creek in Maynard, the related damage from flooding. The City of Maynard will be partnering with Chippewa County in an advisory role and Hawk Creek Watershed District in an advisory role to complete this project. Dr. John Meyer is a development advisor from Maynard. He will be able to answer your questions on the details of this project. I thank you for your consideration on this project. And Mr. Chair, I do believe that you were handed out information regarding this project as well.
Thank you. If you'd like to identify yourself for the record,
yes,
please.
My name is John Meyer. I'm the development advisor to the City of Maynard, Minnesota. I might want to give you a little just additional background just for a second or two, just to entertain myself, if nothing else. Maynard sits in a location where County Ditch 11 and the Hawk Creek actually converge. And that watershed that's created is about 635,000 acres of land. And if you get 1 inch of rain in that area, it's like 17 billion gallons of water, according to the city engineer. So that volume of water is significant to the events and the properties and the topography of Maynard. And because of the recent rain events and the additional impervious surface and the drainage, this problem has come to bear in the city. Originally in the 1950s, this berm ditch was constructed with USDA money to kind of keep the water out of town, and unfortunately hasn't worked. So we're here today requesting some financial support from the state for this particular flooding problem that exists right now. Thank you.
Mr. Meyer, could you, we have this map in front of us, and it doesn't tell us what direction the water flows. I assume it all kind of flows south and west. Is that correct?
Yeah, the water kind of all flows south through Maynard.
And so Hawk Creek at that point is flowing generally west?
South. It's actually flowing south through town. It kind of comes west a little bit than south. The Hawk Creek originates in up in Wilmer area, and the County Ditch 11 actually starts around Highway 12 west.
And so
Wilmer.
They converge there at the very bottom of our map where
yes.
the dike takes that sharp turn?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. And you said that this is going to raise that berm an average of 3 feet. Is that correct?
Yes, it is, Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Wagenius has a question.
Yes. My question is basically, why did you choose 3 feet?
I'm sorry?
Why 3 feet?
Well, we had an engineer study. I'm sorry, Representative. We had an engineer kind of study the best solution. So compared to moving homes, businesses, elevating streets and things, it seemed to be much, much more cost-effective, according to the engineer, to raise the berm 3 feet.
I'm sorry. Representative Wagenius.
Well, it's not so much I'm questioning whether the berm is better than another solution.
Sure.
It is, with climate, global warming, we are anticipating bigger storms. And so my question is related to how are you anticipating the exact 3 feet when we look at these bigger storm events? And that's what I'm trying to get at.
Mr. Meyer.
Yes, Representative, according to the city engineer who examined the historical trends of the water flows, that's an average of 3 feet. And they believe that's in anticipation of climate change and any other activity that might happen there. So they're fairly confident that this is a permanent solution to the problem that exists right now.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. It would be helpful if we knew if you were using the latest rainfall event information. For one, and I mean, that's one of the issues we're kind of faced with. People are making decisions how to deal with global warming, but what is the data they're using, and is this going to be sufficient for 50 years, 20 years, 10 years? And that's the issue I'm trying to get at.
Sure.
Representative Mr. Meyer.
Yes, Representative. According to the city engineer, he's using the most recent available data on the rain and snow to come up with this elevation to have a long-term solution. And the city wants that solution to be at a minimum 50 years. So I trust that that anticipates where the rain and snow totals have been and that this elevation is appropriate.
Representative Hansen has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And was I correct that this is a public ditch?
Yes,
Mr. Meyer.
Representative, yes, it is.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative Hansen.
Why wouldn't this be treated like all the other public ditches where those that benefit from the ditch pay for the cost? I mean, let me just finish. That says 623,105 acres at $655,870. So that's less than a buck an acre to those that benefit from the drainage that occurs here. Why would the general public, why would my taxpayers have to pay to do this, to fix this?
Mr. Meyer.
Yes, Representative. The benefactor is primarily the community of Maynard and the residents and businesses that are subject to the flooding. That's really benefiting properties from this.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, but the benefit with drainage lies to those that have their property drained to enhance their agricultural production within the watershed, and that's the benefit. The benefit of the berm, I understand what you're saying, to deal with the consequences of increased flow, overland flow that's coming from the ditch to protect the city, but the bounce that occurs in the watersheds, if you assign, like every other ditch that has a public assessment, less than a buck and an acre, you could pay for that berm to pay for the public consequence of the private property that's being benefited under drainage law.
Mr. Meyer.
Yes, Representative. We have talked to the Hawk Creek Watershed District and the county, and they believe that the benefit is primarily to the city itself. So we will obviously probably need to revisit that. But in a discussion, that's what their interpretation was.
Representative Hausman has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This also wasn't on the list yet, and I don't know if either of the gentlemen know why. Is this a new emerging issue, or why hasn't it been in our mix yet on the Lacusma list?
Mr. Miller, or Representative Miller, or Mr. Meyer, do you have any idea on... Perhaps
Representative or Chairman, I believe a couple years ago it may have been on the DNR list somewhere. I'm not sure precisely why it is on right now.
And Mr. Chair, I wouldn't want to take, if there's time after the next bill, because I want the last bill to be heard, but if there were time and if Mr. Lacusma were willing to come down, it would just be interesting to get some feedback.
Thank you, Representative Hausman. The Chair will take that under advisement. Other questions for this particular project? If not, Representative Miller, do you have any final remarks?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members, for this opportunity. I hope that you take this bill in care and you can support it moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you for bringing the issue to our committee. Next up, we have Representative Mark Bart with the informational hearing on House File 771. Welcome, Representative Mark Bart. If you'd like to outline your bill for us, please.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I have House File 771, and any time I talk about flood mitigation, I have to just step back and make some thank yous, because the Red River Valley, especially since 1997, there has literally been hundreds of millions of state dollars spent to make those communities safer. And it's been tripartisan, starting with Arne Carlson, who was governor, and Jesse Ventura and Tim Pawlenty, and now Mark Dayton, and several chairmen, past and present, Representative Hausman and others who have done that. And also a huge thanks to Kent Lacasmo, who, working with all these projects, he has just been super. So just a huge thank you. And I really go back to April 5th, 1997, and I remember that day. The Red River Valley had had over about 150 inches of snow over 96, 97. Things were starting to melt, and it was a Saturday, and it started out with a drizzle, then started with a steady rain, and then it went to sleet, and then by about midnight, it was a blizzard. And that was that Saturday was the day Breckenridge, the northern part, went under. I think it was the next day that Ada was flooded completely. And had it not frozen that night, and it froze for about a week, Fargo-Moorhead probably also would have gone down because the overland was a-coming. And then when it broke loose about a week later, Fargo-Moorhead was okay for the most part. And then it went up and hit Grand Forks about the 15th or 16th in East Grand Forks, and they flooded out at that time. So it was quite a time, but I think it was kind of the start of really a lot of these flood projects. And a lot of it, there's not a lot left to go, quite frankly, because of the great efforts of the state and a lot of legislators here around the table. So the projects that we have in this bill are two of them. And I have to say that the bill says for $2.8 million, and $2.3 would be for the city of Halstead and $500,000 for Ada. That should be changed to $4.3 million because the Ada portion should go from $500,000 to $2 million, and I'll have the mayor explain that. But in short, the city of Halstead project is, they had levees actually built in the 1970s. And so that took the residents out of the floodplain for insurance purposes and so forth. But because of new rules and regulations, the city now has 2 years to upgrade those levees. Otherwise, they'll come back into the floodplain. I have the mayor here to talk about that. And the city of Ada really has just the south side to complete. They've been working on levees and so forth the last couple of years. So I have Mayor Jim Ellison from Ada to talk about that, and Mayor Ron Gottenberg from Halstead to talk about that, and then some technical. I have Lucas Faith from Halstead Utilities if there's more detail. So if I could allow, these folks came from a long distance today, if I could have the mayor say a few words.
Absolutely. Please introduce yourself for the record, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Marquardt. My name is Jim Ellison. I'm the mayor of the city of Ada. On April 6, 1997, Ada was evacuated due to flooding. In some areas, the city's more than 5 feet deep. This flooding was compounded by a blizzard and below zero temperatures. Since that time, we have fought two flood events that surpassed the 97 event and declared a state of emergency 8 times. In 1999, with the assistance of the Minnesota DNR and the Wild Rice Watershed District, we began an Army Corps study to pursue funding for an Army Corps flood protection project, and when rising costs proved federal assistance unattainable, we sought assistance through the State of Minnesota Flood Hazard Mitigation Grant Program. The City of Ada currently has been graciously funded to $7.8 million through the Hazard Mitigation Grant Fund, and these dollars have been able to complete numerous flood protection projects. These include a nearly completed flood protection for the entire city on the north of Trunk Highway 200, which includes the East Levee, realignment of JD Ditch 51, and the construction of the Northwest Levee. Minor construction items such as turf establishment remain on the portion of the project which will be completed in the spring. The entire levee system in this area has been constructed. Additionally, design and construction of flood improvements in Ada have been coordinated with MnDOT, and the successful implementation of 2 road raises have been completed on the north and south sides of the community. The final portion of the project we need is to complete on the south side, where currently an emergency levee exists. This levee is not adequate elevation to meet recent hydrological conditions. This project, when complete, will certify Ada to a 100-year flood event and is ready to go. Currently, Norman County is undergoing an update of the flood insurance study, and the City of Ada expects to receive a letter which will basically place more than half of the community in the floodplain. We have been fighting flooding and for flood protection assistance for our community for 18 years. And we are very close to completion of a community-wide flood protection project. With the $2 million request, we anticipate completing our project in the 2015 and 16 construction season. And although not protecting our citizens from the new floodplain maps, we will hopefully limit the time that they remain within the floodplain. And I would like to thank the committee for hearing our request and considering our proposal and answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Mayor Ellison. I do not see any questions at this time, so we'll go ahead to the next testifier.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, my name is Ron Gottaberg, and I'm the mayor of Halsted. I've been on the city council in Halsted since 1974, so I've gone through these flood events like Ada just mentioned. Our city council has three real priorities that we deal with right away, and the first one is power, second one is sewer and water, and our third one is safety, and the safety is the levee around our community. Power, we have our own generating system in town that can kick in if we lose power from Minkota. We can supply power to our whole community. During the 79 flood, we were the only city between Crookston and Moorhead that had electrical power, and all of the residents from the area came to us for fuel for their generators, for food. Again, between Crookston and Moorhead, we had the only grocery store that was available, and still have the only grocery store available between those communities. So we need to protect those two items. We also have a nursing home in town, the Heritage House, and that has 40 residents in it currently. Anytime if there is a disaster and you have to move elderly, you lose a certain percent of that population. They just do not survive a move. So that's part of our safety issue, is to protect those people. We also host Halsted Telephone Company, which provides internet access all the way up to Grand Forks or East Grand Forks, Crookston, and we just received a grant to go around the rural area of Crookston to serve the rural residents in that area, and we service towers and businesses in Crookston itself. So we do not want to lose that hub of communications in our area of the state. So the levy that we're asking for some improvements on benefit those areas and keep the communication, allow the health and safety of our residents and our residents in our living center, and provide fuel and food for areas that may lose power and may need assistance for those types of things. As far as the details of our project, we have some gate wells that need to be improved. We have some other issues that I'll let Lucas address to the committee. Mr. Chairman, I would like to take any questions that you have on the general nature of the city of Halsted at this time.
Representative Lilly has a question.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Mayor, I think Halsted, correct me if I'm wrong, with Representative Marquardt, but isn't it known for the big snowmobile, antique snowmobile gathering or something like that? Are you still doing that? I know it's not related to flooding, but it's. I hope you're still doing it, and it sounds like a great event.
Mr. Chairman, I believe they're in their fifth year. The event was last weekend. Yep. And we did host a dog sled race from Halsted to East Grand Forks a few years ago. Interest in that died out because of the instability of the river. You never knew when it was going to freeze over or be water there. And some of the leaders of the dog sled community moved away. So, but that was an exciting event for Halstead also.
Mr. Lilly, a follow-up?
Mr. Chair, just how many antique snowmobiles were there this year? Just curious.
Mr. Gardeberg.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I have not heard an official count over 70? Almost 80. Okay.
75. 75. Very good. So how old is an antique snowmobile?
They are rated by the age they were built, or the year they were built. They have several categories, and from the very older ones, the original ones, up until, I believe, somewhere in the 60s is where they cut it off.
Well, that makes Representative Lilly an antique then.
Right.
So how old is the oldest commercially produced snowmobile? Nobody knows?
Mr. Chair?
Vice Chair Swazinski.
I think we should probably have Mr. Fabian in the room for that question.
All right. I will let that go.
But I wanted to emphasize the importance of the city of Halstead to the Red River Valley. We are a hub for our surrounding communities, Hendrum, Purley, Georgetown even, and Shelley, Neillsville to the north.
Thank you.
And Plymouth.
We have one more testifier. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Lucas Spaeth with the City of Halstead.
And your last name again?
Spaeth.
Thank you. Please go ahead.
As Ron said, I'm more here for any information that you need. You have a one-page cutout, I think, was handed out by Mr. Harnick. And to go into some detail on it, all of our gate wall structures don't meet current design standards. That's what came up with our engineering study that we've already paid for. We've already made our matching grant with the state and the DNR.
Mr. Spaeth, for my sake, can you explain just what a gate well is?
A gate well structure is built into the berm or the levee, and we can operate the closure from above, close it off, and holds water out. And we usually hold a little bit of water back, and then we can pump water from inside to out, so we don't end up like Rushford when they flooded a few years back.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
At the entrance of these gate wells, we have a holding area that holds water from melting snow inside of the levee. So when it gets to a certain level, we are pumping that water out so we don't flood from within.
So just to clarify, normally when it's not flooding, that gate well is open and the water flows under the dike and out into the river. But when the water is high, you close it, and the water that collects behind the levee has to be pumped over the levee to get out of town. Mr. Spaeth.
Added that two of our gate well structures are 40 feet deep, so that's how deep the levee is. And road runs on the north side of one, and the other one is just the levee, so 40 feet deep, and it's 200 feet wide.
Thank you. I do not see, did you have another comment, sir?
Mr. Chair, we currently have three wells, and we're going to combine two into one in our new design so that we are more efficient with the pumping and outlets.
Thank you. I'd like to briefly go back to the ADA project. The original price tag was $500,000, and it jumped to $2 million. Is that correct? Could you fill me in on what happened there? Mr. Ellison. Yeah. Mayor Ellison.
Thank you. The $2 million, or we anticipate the total price probably to come more in the price of $1.5 million, but we look at this phase of the project to complete the project, and we felt it would be beneficial to ask for monies to complete the whole project at this time, and that's how we got to be the $2 million.
So was something added, Mayor, to the project, or was it just a very rough estimate that was first included in the bill?
I think the first estimate was a rough estimate, and We have some monies left over from the project that was completed last year, and we anticipate that with the monies left over and the $2 million project, that our project will be complete.
Very good. I do not see any other questions regarding this bill. Representative Markbar, do you have any closing remarks?
Mr. Chairman, just thank you to you and the committee for hearing this and for your consideration. Thank you.
Thank you very much. If we do have a little time left, Director Lacasmo, would you like to come down and try and answer some of Representative Hausman's questions? Director Lacasmo, please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kent Lacasmo, Director of Capital Investment for DNR.
Director, there seems to be some questions about the famous list that is apparently a work in progress.
Mr. Chairman, yes. We create a list of the known projects, and it's kind of evolving as we learn about more projects. And a couple of the projects discussed today, Ortonville, Browns Valley, and Maynard, we learned about this year when bills were introduced. Local governments will make an application to the department, and we'll have some more specifics to review. So we learned about a little bit more about those projects today, and we'll make contact with the city's technical staff to get more details.
Thank you, Director. Representative Muguinius has a question.
Yes. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm grateful that you're going to be making those contacts, because it seems to me that we are using different criteria for, is this project going to last for 30 years, or is it going to be a 100-year flood type? And it does seem to me we should have some standard when these projects are done. And can I trust that DNR is going to make sure that there is some standard that is being met?
Director Lacasmo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius. For levees, the standard that's referenced in the rules is to build them to 3 feet above the 100-year. Now, 100-year flood elevations with new data may change, so you would build in some factor of safety. It's also, part of this is how much money does the local government want to spend, and are they comfortable with the lower level of protection? They could be. Mostly what we're seeing is that local governments wish to have the at least the 100-year plus 3 feet. They'd like to get away from having any requirement for flood insurance. And in the department, that hasn't been our primary goal. Our primary goal is to provide basic flood protection. And quite frankly, I think even the folks that are protected behind the levees should still be getting flood insurance. But we hate to see something happen like happened in Rushford, which had a levee that was certified. Nobody behind it had flood insurance. They had a bigger flood, and basically everybody in town was damaged. So there is some need for ongoing flood insurance, but that really has been an emphasis from local governments to do some of these projects so they can avoid FEMA requirements for flood insurance.
Representative Hausman has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I have always appreciated that with Mr. Lacasmo's work, we always know they have been put through a filter, and that I think everything is treated somewhat equally, and you usually try to let us know they're actually ready to do the work. The one that I thought was maybe a little bit different from the others, and I wonder if you could comment, the city of Maynard chronic flooding problem is perhaps has some different dimensions to it, and I know it's perhaps new to you also, but any particular early advice?
Director Lacasmo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hausman, well, in the bill that's before you, I know they reference both sewer work and raising the levee. The sewer work would be something that we haven't funded under the flood hazard mitigation program, unless there was a sewer line that was under levee that had to be relocated, some minor type stuff like that. But typically that type of work would not be funded under the flood hazard mitigation program. It would be the levee and the raising of the levee to provide flood protection.
Follow-up, Representative Hausman?
No.
Further comments, Director Lacasmo?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I mean, as we look at priorities, and we're providing a list and develop a list of the known projects that we're aware of, so for the committee's benefit, they can look at that. When we look at priorities from the department's perspective, we look at both the risk that exists in the city and then the readiness. And we funded projects in phases, and these are freestanding phases that serve benefit by itself if it's completed, and that can be done. Because quite often, I think what we've seen over the last decade is communities will say they're ready, and realistically, they may not be totally ready because they don't have all the land acquisition or they have a bunch of steps to go through. And that's why we've looked at doing these in phases. And I think that's, especially some of these very large projects, if it's a $30 million project, that's a tough, you know, that's a tough number to get to and not have any other projects constructed. So we do look at funding these projects in phases that make sense.
So, Director, are you in process of updating your list as we speak?
Mr. Chairman, yes. We don't have Ortonville, Bronze Valley, or Maynard on our existing list, so we'll develop some more information about those and add them.
And how soon might you anticipate that we would be able to see your revised list?
Mr. Chairman, next week.
Very good. We look forward to that. And I do not see any other questions from members today. Thank you all. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.